everybody. Welcome back. I'm Stacey Bellward, the host of the Connected Families Podcast. Welcome to our community. We are people committed to pursuing God's grace and truth for ourselves and then daily working to pass that grace and truth on to our children. I'm so glad that you're here today. Well, today we are going to be talking about parenting through grief, our own grief and our children's grief. This is a special podcast with a special guest from our community. Stacey Rodenbeck is the widowed mother of Susan, almost five, and Chris, 3.5. The Rodenbecks live in central Arkansas, where Stacey is employed as an associate professor of biology at Harding University. Since the death of her husband in 2020, Stacey has focused on developing a robust relationship with her children that positions the three of them to operate as a team. Stacey is thankful to God for the new mercies of each morning. Welcome to the show, Stacey.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Well, I am so happy to have you back onto the show. I think it was last December when we got to do a short conversation. I interviewed you for a podcast that was talking about sort of your success with the framework and how you were able to implement that in your parenting and your family. And at that time, you mentioned about how the framework has helped you to parent through pain and grief, especially after you lost your husband. Mm-hmm. So thanks again for coming on the show.
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here.
I wanted to start out this conversation by saying, you know, I have not experienced the grief that you, Stacey, have experienced or many of the people in our community. And so I want everyone to know that before we got on the air, I did ask Stacey, like, help me out with the language, because I know that it's very important and that certain words can just make people feel worse. They can be kind of triggers or rub people the wrong way. And I just want to tell everyone, I might not get it all right, but I'm trying. And if I get it wrong, send me an email. Because tell me how I can do it better next time. I just want to learn and be humble. And so, Stacey, I give you permission too to stop me in my tracks and say, hey, we don't really love that word. Can we change that? Because then everyone can learn. Is that okay?
That sounds great. And I want to put you a little bit at ease in the sense that grieving is such an individualized experience that language that bothers me doesn't bother somebody else. Language I use may bother someone else. And so we're all here to support each other and learn together and be sensitive to one another. And so, like, even people who have experienced grief are going to make those same mistakes. So I just appreciate your willingness to accept that and to learn and partner with us.
Good. Well, thanks for saying that too. I appreciate the grace. Before we go further, I just want to say it's episode 159. If anybody wants to go back and check out Stacey's testimonial from a previous episode. Well, let's dive in. So Stacey, you had a toddler and you had an infant when your husband died. And I do know that grief is unpredictable. It's unique to each person. It changes over time. But how have you yourself experienced grief?
That's really such a good question. And you're right, it changes so much over time. So when my husband died, that was by far the hardest loss I've ever experienced to this date. I really hope it ends up being the hardest one I experience in my life. But I was freshly postpartum. My youngest was 7 weeks old. And so I was already dealing with, you know, postpartum fatigue and brain fog. Grief just layered itself right on top of that. And so my experience of grief early on, like even when we were like having to make decisions about life support and all of that in the hospital, like my body just like stopped cueing me for normal things. And I remember telling my mom at the time, like, I promise to eat if you give me food, but like my body is not telling me when I'm hungry. And so there were some very like physical responses to grief, especially early on. And then in the weeks after he died, I really struggled to sleep. I couldn't fall asleep easily, couldn't stay asleep easily. So really struggled to sleep and really experienced a lot of like brain fog. You'll hear in grieving circles about the fog of grief. I've always loved to read. I could not read. And which is tricky because I was headed back into the classroom a month after he died. So I had to figure out how to do my job without being able to do a really important part of my job very well. And so that was really difficult. Also, as a Christian, one of the most surprising things to me was that I could not pray words that were my own. I tried and they would not come. And one of the most beautiful things that people did for me when I shared that with my community was all of a sudden I was given all of these prayer books with books that were written, were prayers written by other people. And so I was able to kind of ease myself back into praying that way. That was a kind of a faith-based struggle. And then just over time, a lot of those initial things have calmed down. My body functions to cue me to eat and sleep. I sleep well now, and the brain fog is mostly gone. But when I have those kind of peaks and troughs with grief, the peaks come farther apart as time go on, for me anyway, but really struggle with patience, particularly with my children. But it can be really hard when I'm dealing with that fatigue of grief. I always feel very tired and my shoulders feel tight and my body hurts. And then, you know, when kids are saying, "Mom, I need a snack. Mom, I need," you know, all of these very normal things, it can be so hard to function in that. So grief looks a million different ways. It looks different every day, but those are some of the bullet points
of the grief
that kind of stand out for to me.
How did you get the strength? Maybe even when did you get the strength to actually start coming out of that, to start thinking about your parenting really intentionally? I can't imagine what that was like in the middle of your grief.
You know, it was so hard. And you know how you can look back over times in your life and you can see how God was giving you a gift that you didn't know he was giving you. So before my husband died, and he died unexpectedly, very unexpectedly. He was not sick. And so I had been reading a book by a Christian man named Jerry Sitzer. It's called A Grace Disguised. And he, in one car accident, lost his mother, his wife, and his three-year-old daughter. And so I had been reading that before my husband died, not knowing that we were headed into that. God gave me the gift of being able to read that book when I couldn't read anything else. And so I finished it in the weeks after he died. And one of the things that Jerry says in that book is that he had, I think, three other children at the time. And he just realized, like, I can't control all of these other things, but I can throw myself wholeheartedly into parenting these children. And he talks about his whole journey with grief that was not at all a diminishing of his grief. And I thought, wow, what an inspiration. And so even in those foggy early days, I remember thinking, like, I don't know what my purpose is overall. Like, a central loss like that, that changes your everyday, changes a lot about your identity. And so there's a lot of discovering yourself that is going on. But for me, knowing that I had two small children was like this anchor point. And it even early on, when it was such a struggle, I remember thinking, like, I am going to parent these children well. Plus, like, they're going to be what I have when I'm old. So, like, I really need to invest, because there's no husband anymore. And at that point, I, like, the thought of remarriage just, like, made me sick to my stomach. And so I was like, I have to invest in these kids. And so there was the grief itself brought a strength in that. And then I just, as I started along the path, I like a lot of people who lose, you know, and have suffered loss that deep, struggled in my relationship with God, but also I could see God's hand all the way through every step of the way. I remember, I guess it was a year and a half after my husband died. It was an evening after work. I was very tired. It was bedtime for the kids and they were not doing what I told them to do, you know, all these things. And I remember, like, not having anything left and saying, like I opened my mouth with the intention of yelling. I was going to yell. I didn't pray first. Like, I was going to yell. And all of a sudden, I can't remember what I said. But like, what came out of my mouth was not yelling. You know, it was connecting and kind. And I remember just thinking, okay, that wasn't me. Like, I was going to yell. Like, that was the decision I had made, was to yell. And then I didn't yell. And just stories like that. So there was finding purpose and then also God's help. So
God's help, God's presence with you, him doing more than you could do. You didn't even have the strength to not yell, but he did it for you in that moment. That was a miracle. Wow.
It's really great.
Were there any Bible verses that were particularly key for you during this time?
Yeah, so there are several, of course, that deal with grief. But I remember before my husband died, when our oldest was a baby, my kids are 16 months apart. So I remember I was driving with a baby to my OB for more prenatal appointments. And every time I was so afraid that one of us was going to die. Before my husband died, I just had this thought that I was going to lose somebody. I thought it was my daughter. I latched onto Isaiah 43:1-3. And then when that death came, I really clung to that. It says, "But now thus says the Lord, he who created you, O Jacob, he who formed you, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by name. You are mine. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you. For I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior." And before losing my husband, as I had kind of adopted this verse to help me through fear, I remember telling myself, like, God might ask you to walk through this fire, but he promises to go with you. And so God does not promise a life of ease and a life without trauma and grief and pain, but he does promise to walk beside us. And so that was a promise that I just clung to and still do.
Yeah. What precious phrases are in those verses, Isaiah 43:1-3. We'll have that linked in our show notes so anyone can tap through and see it. But wow, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they shall not overwhelm you. Well, I kind of want to move on to talking about the unique struggle with your kids, like parenting your kids. Your kids were grieving. Mm-hmm. Are grieving, walk through the grief. So what are some unique struggles for parenting grieving children?
Yeah. So as I answer that question, one thing I want to make aware to your listeners is my kids were very young when their dad died. My daughter was 18 months old and my son was 7 weeks old. And so I'm going to talk about the struggles from that perspective, but I know a number of grieving parents who have kids who are much older when they suffered the loss of a loved one. And so I can't speak as well to those struggles. I want to make that clear that I'm kind of sharing out of my own experience, which is limited to having very small children.
You know, that's a good point to make, Stacey, because I'm just going to give a plug right now then, because this coming Thursday on our Thursday Parenting Tips email, we have an amazing blog post that's coming out. And it is the story of a family who have kids of multiple ages and they went through a lot of grief. But one of the parts of their story was that they lost a child and sibling. So walking with the kids through their grief, and it's a powerful story. I'm just going to say one thing really quick, because I went over and I looked at it and I was in tears already reading it, and it's not even done yet. It's coming out because we're recording this a little bit earlier. But here was one thing that they said that you're going to be able to read in that blog post. It was something that their hospice nurse told them and that they could really talk through with their kids. And it was this: the hospice nurse said, if love could make people stay alive, if love could heal people, then this little girl, their sister and their daughter, would never have died. Oh my goodness, I had tears in my eyes reading the story. And I just thought, that's amazing. This hospice nurse just knew what to say. Because, you know, a lot of people, including me, we sometimes just don't know what to say or we biff it. But yeah. What a powerful statement. Does that speak to you, Stacey?
My goodness. Yes, it does. I remember writing something very similar over and over again. Like, it was a theme in my journaling after my husband died. And grief just feels, a loss like that just feels so impossible, because it feels like your love and your desire are so huge that they ought to be able to prevent the loss or bring that person back. Like it just, it's this rift in like what you're experiencing and what you think should be true. And so there are so many, you know, places in, you know, literature and TV where you kind of see that that theme where somebody has experienced a devastating loss.
One other thing I should say is that you and one of the other people on staff and I are going to record a bonus podcast for the helpers, for the school teachers and the pastors and the people that are working with kids, help them understand maybe some of the do's and don'ts or the language, or we're going to tackle that. So stay tuned for that, everybody. But okay, that was a bit of a detour. Let's go back to the original question, was the unique struggles of parenting grieving children.
So just in general, one of the things that I have found to be tricky is that parenting, whether you're parenting a grieving child or not, is just a whole world of like, I don't know what's going on here. Yeah. So I have two kids. Both of them are highly intelligent. One of them in particular kind of falls in the sensitive and intense category. And so with her, I'm constantly trying to figure out like, is this normal kid behavior? Is this sensitive, intense kid behavior? Or is this grieving kid behavior? And the answer to that question feels like the key. It's not always the key, but it feels like the key to what I should be doing, right? Do I need to get us into OT, or do I need to get us into grief counseling? Do I need to just be patient and let it, you know, kind of roll over? And so that's one thing that is kind of an added layer of complexity parenting grieving kids, is that you don't always know whether what's going on is grief related to or not.
Yes. Yeah, that really makes sense. But I know that even from our last testimonial episode that we recorded before, you have told us that the framework has really helped you shaped how you've parented your kids who are experiencing grief. So I'm wondering if we could spend the rest of our time on this podcast and just walk through the framework, the four layers, and have you explain how you have used the framework to parent your kids in your context. So why don't we just start with safety? That's the message, the foundation of the framework. And it's the message that we want to communicate to our kids. You are safe with me. There's a lot going in there. And if our listeners have been paying attention on the podcast, they know we talk a lot about foundation and those questions of what's going on inside of me. So share with us about that layer, Stacey.
Yeah. So this one, I don't know, you guys, like you said, you guys talk about this all the time, and it's such an important piece. Like there's a reason why it's the foundation piece, right? And one of the things when I was kind of thinking about this podcast and thinking about how I wanted to share this, one of the key things here is that people who have suffered a central loss, meaning that day to day has been altered dramatically by that loss. It can be child loss, it can be spousal loss, it can be the loss of a best friend, right? But somebody, a loss that alters your significant day-to-day activities. What happens is a shift in identity, right? In my case, I went from being a wife to being a widow. And I was like, I don't even know what that is. I don't know, like, you know, you have these concepts of what a widow is, but they're all old. Like I was 35, and how can I be a widow? Like, what is a widow? What does a widowhood look like inside of me? And so what I was doing, and what so many people are doing, is finding their way in a new life and in a new me. And so when I start thinking about foundation of safety and thinking about really understanding our kids, grief provides a way for us to connect with them. And that word connect is the next, but connect with them, which allows us to then provide safety. And so like, I have experienced hard, big, new emotions, combinations of emotions I've never experienced before. And so when I start to think about like, okay, when I entered into this life of widowhood, I was brand new at it. I didn't know what I would be feeling. My body felt foreign to me, all of these things. And so when I think about my kids, they are new, whether they're grieving or not. Like kids are new at being humans. Like, and so they're living in these little bodies that they're still trying to figure out, and they're growing into new emotions all the time, and they're changing, and grief adds a layer of complexity to that. And so when I think about what have I needed as I've navigated this new me, it really helps me to realize, like, they need safety. They need me to sit with their hard emotions and not try to argue with them and say, like, you shouldn't be feeling that right now. They need me to come in low and slow and figure out what's going on in them first before we go any farther.
The learning of the new me. You had to reinvent what the new you was, and that's helped you probably grow compassion. You didn't use that word, but grow compassion. Yes. So that you could go low, go slow, and listen. Yeah. Do you have any other examples of how this layer played out in daily life?
Yeah. So just in general, I feel like my kids, with kind of their developmental leaps or whatever, you know, as they're moving into a new developmental stage, that's often accompanied by what we might call misbehavior. You know, they have trouble regulating their emotions a little bit more. Sleep goes out the window, like all these things. And so that's true for me too. When I'm, you know, kind of doing a new hard thing and figuring that out, all those things are harder for me too. And so just in general, that has happened. And with grieving kids who were young when they had their loss, they're also, these new developmental stages give them something new to process with their grief. I've seen that as well. But a specific example, so my 3.5-year-old is my son. Man, he's such a sweet little boy, but he was recently just kind of struggling. He's a very even-keeled kid. If my daughter is sensitive and intense, he is like not that way. But we had this time of the last couple of weeks ago where he was dealing with some physical aggression, and he was also just crying every time something didn't go his way. You know, before learning the framework, I would have, you know, been like, dude, what's going on? Like, why are you crying? That wasn't a big deal, you know? But instead, I have this idea of wait. These are signs of a developmental leap. Now, they might be signs of something else as well that we may have to deal with. But my first go-to now is, why don't I be patient and watch and see if there are other signs that he's going through some kind of developmental processing. We do this with my daughter too. And so I started paying attention. And then when I saw, like, oh, I'm not just seeing an uptick in physical aggression and tears, I'm also seeing that he's trying out new phrases and like combining words differently. And he's waking up in the night, like we're losing sleep, but he's asking like questions about death and life and heaven. And so he's kind of processing grief and even like, mom, like, why do birds have wings? I mean, you know, just all the things, you know, some of these things are so frustrating, but he wanted cereal with milk, but he wanted the cereal pushed to the side of his bowl and the milk poured in next to it, you know, all of these things. And I felt like, okay, these are clues that you just need to be patient. You know, boundaries stay where they need to be, but be patient, because I think what's going on is that he is processing something. And sure enough, he has kind of come down to the other side of it. He's calmed down and he can do a lot of new things. He learned how to ride his bike without training wheels last weekend. But what I'm seeing is I just needed to give him time, because his kind of his world expanded and then he needs to fit into that world.
I love that. And so giving him the space, being curious as a parent to say, let's just wait and see. Let's see what there's something else going on here. Is communicating the message, you're safe with me in this stage where he doesn't even know what's going on, really. He doesn't know, right? He's just trying to make sense of life right now, that he's safe with you. That's so good. So then we move on to the next layer, which is connection, and is the message, you are loved no matter what. Talk more about that.
So when I think about this in the context of my grief and then giving that to my children, this connection, I think about what I've needed. And I have really needed people to say, it makes sense that you feel the way you do. The last thing I need is for somebody to say anything that sounds like you shouldn't feel as bad as you do, that your feelings are over the top, or, you know, any kind of, at least it wasn't this way statements. Those are just so harmful and they hurt. just in general, again, whether my kids are dealing with grief or kind of everyday things, I have realized it's so helpful to say to them, it makes sense that you feel this way. It makes sense that you're angry about your brother taking away your toy. It makes sense that you're feeling frustrated that mommy won't let you go outside right now. You know, all of those things, and validating, telling them like, I see what you're feeling and it makes sense that you feel that way, has just been so helpful to remember I need that in my grief and to give my kids that. And then I can be just so much more observant and see like, oh, we just came up with a negative emotion. What happened before that? Oh, it makes sense that they're feeling that way. And also, she's 5, he's 3. We haven't learned all of the emotion regulation steps yet. And so this makes sense and we can start there.
Wow, that makes so much sense. So do you have any examples of like daily life or maybe one of those hard moments actually had a lot of grief underneath of it?
Yeah, like I said, sometimes it's tricky with kids who were young, figure out whether it's grief or development or whatever. But I remember specifically my daughter, and I think she wasn't quite 3 yet. So she was 18 months old when my husband died. And I think she wasn't quite 3. She was 2. And she was having a really hard time with sleeping. She has definitely been my kid that like when grief peaks or when development peaks, then sleep is just very hard for her. It's hard for her to go to bed. And I do think that is connected with grief. But one night I was putting her to bed and she was really fighting that. She didn't want to go to bed. She was still in a crib at that point. And then she said, "My daddy is in the dark." And I was processing that and I realized like we talked about him all the time, but she didn't have words for where he is now. I hadn't given her a vocabulary for that. And so the behavior at bedtime was the manifestation of this confusion over her daddy. And what she was seeing was just darkness where her daddy is now. And so I said, "Hey, sweetheart, I can see, you know, why you feel like daddy's in the dark, because we can't see him anymore. You know where I think daddy is? I think he's in this beautiful place that's full of light and God's beauty. And I like to call it the eternal mountains." And I borrowed that language from C.S. Lewis. From that point on, she just latched onto that. And so we then could talk about light and love and joy where daddy is. And then we had a place that we wanted to go. And so she moved from saying like, "Daddy's in the dark," to like, "Can we go to the eternal mountains to see daddy?" And that was hard too, because I had to say like, "I don't know when we get to go." You know, we have to wait for the resurrection when God comes for us. So those are specifics.
Stacey, thank you for sharing that story. It's just, I think it sheds so much light. I know there's people that can resonate with it. There's those of us who haven't walked through that grief that just have had light bulb moments to understand the reality of it. I just really, really appreciate you sharing it. I just want to take a really quick break, everybody, and just ask you, is this conversation enlightening, helpful, useful? Will you send it to a friend who might also think the same thing and benefit from it? It really is just such a blessing to us and our ministry. It sets in motion all the goodness of reaching as many people as we can. So if you would share it, if you'd have an extra couple minutes and you could write a review, we'd really appreciate it. Okay, we've got 2 layers of the framework to go through, Stacey, and this has just been a beautiful, rich conversation that I just feel privileged to be a part of. But let's go to the 3rd layer, which is coaching yes. our kids, which is communicating to them the message, you are called and capable. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So when I think about coaching just in general, I'm not an athlete, but I think about what coaches do, right? And they take people who are new at a skill and help them develop that skill, right? And so for me, widowhood and single parenthood, that was all new territory. I mean, goodness, parenthood was new territory. And then we added widowhood and single parenthood on top of that. And so I really needed people who had been there before me, who knew how to do this, at least on some level. And I needed them to be people who would say, "This is hard. Like what you are doing is so hard. and you are strong and God is strong. And so with that, you can do this. You know, people who would help me to find the next right thing to do and figure out how to do it. And so again, when I think back to, and even now, think about what I need in these kind of figuring out the new me, I need good coaches. My children need that as well.
I love that. This is hard. It is so hard. And you are strong and you can do it. And I'm sure they were adding on with the power of the Holy Spirit living in you to give you what you need. Do you have any practical examples of when you had to tell your children, they're so little, to tell your children, this is hard, but you are strong and you can do it? Any stories of that?
Yeah. So I feel like the stories of this, because my kids are so little, have less to do with processing grief and more to do with like just everyday stuff, right? And so it just shows up so often. And one of the things that is just rolling around in my head right now is with my 3.5-year-old learning how to get into and out of his clothes, right? It's such a small practical thing that seems so small to us, but it's a new skill for him. And so he really struggles with his shirt. And so he will just say, I can't put my shirt on. It's too hard. And so I have some choices there when he says that, right? I can say, oh, that's okay, mommy, I'll do it for you, which sometimes I am ashamed to say I do because it's faster to do it that way. Or I can say, come on, dude, you put your shirt on 3 times last week. Like, come on, haven't we? You know, I have those choices. But yeah, I can also validate the hardship. And I can say, yeah, you know, shirts are tricky. And if you stop as an adult to think about it, shirts are tricky. You got like the head hole and the armholes, and you got to figure out 3 holes and you have to get it the right way around. Like, it's tricky. You know, there's all this stuff. And so like, I have started saying things like, yeah, you know, shirts are tricky because you have armholes and head holes and you feel like you have to bend your arms all funny to get your shirt on. And so I validate the hardship that way. And then I say, you know what? I saw you put your shirt on yesterday. I saw you solve this problem yesterday. What did you do then? You're really good at solving problems. I wonder if you can solve this one. And sometimes I do have to step in and help him, you know, find the armhole or whatever. But giving him that language of validating, this is a hard new skill and I know you're ready for it.
And doesn't that communicate? You are called and you are capable, little man. You can do it. I believe in you. Yes. And what a powerful message to say to our kids, that you can just even feel yourself rising up like, I can do it. And then the celebration is sweet. Okay, well, in our last couple of minutes here, let's get to the top of the framework, which is correct. It's the layer of accountability where we're communicating to our child, you're responsible for your actions. Mm-hmm. So how has that played out in your life?
This one, Stacey, I would say it is perhaps the piece of the framework that is hardest for me, because especially in grief, but just in general, I like to make my kids happy and I am so aware of the need to connect with them that I'm always afraid that I'm going to ruin that piece. And so I'm learning about myself that like, creating boundaries is important. When I think about it, like, I need those boundaries too. I need lanes to drive in so that I'm not swerving all over and having chaos all over my life. And so my relationships have been strengthened by healthy boundaries that people have placed on me. And so one of the areas that I see this with my kids are really afraid of death. We all are, but like, death lives in our home in a way that it doesn't live in everybody's home. And So they really are scared of death. They know what death is. Death took their daddy away. They know they had a daddy and that he's not here anymore. And this is so tricky, they sometimes use that fear as a stall tactic. And so working the framework has really helped me to kind of distinguish between the two and develop some mechanisms for interacting with their fear in a way that doesn't belittle the fear, but that also holds them accountable to obedience without stalling. It's tricky.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it something that we probably all do in all the various ways? That's my weakness. So it's my excuse not to be strong in that area. Or I give myself a pass card because of whatever reason. So do you have a practical example of holding your child accountable, but you're still validating their fear because you don't want to minimize that?
Yeah. So the one that comes most to mind again is with my daughter and sleep. So you may hear that sleep has been a theme in her childhood. So she struggled off and on with sleep. And in particular, when she's dealing with a kind of leap in development, heightened fear, or kind of responding to underlying stress she's picking up from me, because of course that happens to you. And so a lot of times that will come out where she's, you know, scared and like crying at bedtime and saying like, I'm scared death will take me in the night. And when I can tell that this is happening there, usually the language shifts, like, so I can tell that she's processing something new or something. So her language about that shifts, which kind of clues me in, or her distress is much bigger. So that kind of clues me into like, this is not just stalling. This is the real deal. I will respond to that by offering a lot more grace during those times. Right now we're in a time like that. And so I do a lot of like staying with her while she falls asleep instead of putting her to bed and leaving the room, holding her hand, letting her ask questions. And while I'm giving her that grace, I'm also giving her some tools. And I'm saying things like, would you like me to pray with you? Sometimes it helps me to pray when I'm scared. Or here's a Bible verse or a hymn that helps me when I'm feeling scared, and kind of giving her tools. And so then I can always tell there's a shift, right? Where I'm not seeing that we're processing anymore, but we don't want to let go of mom staying with me till I fall asleep.
And yeah. So, I really like mom being here with me.
Yes. And so she'll call me and, you know, mom, I'm feeling scared. I'm scared to go to sleep because I think death will take me. So similar language, but a little bit different behavior. And so I do always go to her when she does that. It's my policy that if my kids call me, I go to them when they're feeling scared. I give her a hug and I say, you know, it makes so much sense to be scared about that. Kind of going back to that connection piece. What are some things we've talked about doing when we feel scared? Coming into that coaching piece. And then a lot of times that will kind of help her. She'll ask me for some of those tools. Can I listen to some music? Can I read a book? Will you pray with me? And then I'll say, I'm going to go back downstairs and I'll come check on you in a little bit. And so kind of holding that boundary that says like, I'm not going to stay here till you fall asleep, but I'm going to make sure that you have what you need.
I love that. And if sleep is like, if there's people out there, if you guys are thinking, oh my goodness, sleep, we have issues too. We have a really great sleep ebook at Connected Families. Go to our website. It's deep and wide and has lots of ideas for helping with sleep. But Stacey, thanks for that. Thanks for the whole conversation, for sharing your stories, walking us through the framework in your context of having experienced the death of your husband and death of daddy for your kids and pulling apart grief and behavior. And you really just showed how amazing, it was just beautiful to hear your stories of holding grace for your kids, being curious, holding grace, and then coming around them with real wisdom. I think that's the other thing that I just heard in your story is just Holy Spirit wisdom, that He is helping you in your parenting. And that was beautiful to hear. So thanks for being with us.
It was my pleasure.
Well, thanks for tuning in today, friends. Hey, we want to hear from you. What did you find helpful from today's podcast? Let us know by sharing a comment, and feel free to share with a friend too. That's always helpful. You know, we are a listener-supported organization. Over 50,000 parents like you listen to the podcast every month. Individual donations make the work to equip and encourage families possible. For more information about Connected Families, follow us on Instagram or Facebook, or go to connectedfamilies.org. I'll see you next time.